You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, 1, 2. Broken like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Joanna Farrar, concertmaster of the Savannah Philharmonic, who will be performing the Dvorak Violin Concerto at the opening concert of the Savannah Philharmonic coming up on Saturday, September 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Lucas Theater for the Arts. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Joanna Farrar.
Thank you so much for having me. It is really lovely to talk to you.
Well, let's get to know Joanna Farrar. Tell me your musical journey.
Oh, I'll try to hit some of the interesting points. Like most other professional violinists, I started when I was really little. I started when I was 4. And I was a little bit odd. There was no other musicians in my family. And so my parents didn't really understand what was happening. I ended up getting accepted into Juilliard when I was 6. So I pretty much started soloing and competing from the time I was very, very little. And luckily, my parents managed to get in touch with some very great violinists who were very kind to a little blonde violinist who they met when I was very, very little. And so I've been sort of playing professionally since I was very small. And after I did then go to Juilliard for college, and I studied with Glenn Dictorow. And I had been working with Itzhak Perlman and Pinchas Zukerman when I was a teenager, and Ms. Kopeck at Manhattan School of Music. But after Juilliard, then I decided that instead of going into more the soloistic career, I really loved orchestra music. So I became an orchestral musician. And since I studied with Mr. Dictorow of the Philharmonic, and he is a great concertmaster, I am very happy to now be a concertmaster in Savannah as well.
So you began at Juilliard at 6.
Yes. Yeah, I was accepted when I was 6. I think I met Mr. Zukerman. I was living in Texas at the time, and he came to play with Dallas, the Dallas Symphony. And so I went backstage and played for him. I actually remember that. It was when I was very, very little, but I do remember meeting him because he was so sweet and so kind to me. And so he was like a very, very lovely person to meet when I was that little. And he suggested to my parents that they should probably send a tape and see if I could audition for their pre-college program. So I did.
And so you were living in Texas, but you got into the pre-college program at Juilliard.
Yeah, very far away. New York City, very, very far from Dallas. And luckily, my parents were both in the airline business, so they could ask to relocate. Took some time and took some work. They had to be obviously quite dedicated to helping me actually get to the right teachers, but they did. And so we started first just traveling back and forth, and then they made the decision to move up north in order to get me closer to the teachers I needed to work with. It was a lot of traveling when I was very little.
And so you progressed very rapidly, apparently.
Yes.
Starting concert performances very early.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was an odd thing. I did start playing chamber music also from a very young age, which I think was also really good. I'm very glad my teachers suggested sort of putting me in chamber music groups from the time I was, I think, 8 or 9 was when I was first playing chamber music. And I think that really helps musicians progress because you learn to blend sound, you learn how to work together with other people, especially as young kids. I think it's really, that's a great practice. So in addition to, you know, the usual etudes and going through the pieces and concertos, then I was also doing a lot of chamber music, which I then was also doing with the Perlman Music Program during summers. So I play chamber music with other strange young kids like myself growing up.
But with the normal performance and competition route directing you towards solo performance, What was the trigger that changed your interest into more orchestral performance?
It's a really good question. It's kind of hard to answer because it was a lot of little things. with Juilliard pre-college, I then switched to Manhattan School of Music pre-college because of Miss Kopek and Mr. Zuckerman, and they were based there instead of Juilliard. And of course, every young person when they're in pre-college has to go into youth orchestra. It's just a part of your training. And I always really loved it, even though it wasn't, a main focus for me and really what I was focusing on in lessons ever. I just always loved the repertoire, and I would fall in love with, listening to CDs of all these different symphonies. I particularly loved Mahler symphonies when I was young. And so I would listen to all these big Mahler symphonies. Youth orchestras, we were not playing the Mahler symphonies or even the big, we would do some Tchaikovsky symphonies and things like that. But I kind of got the bug at that point and always liked it more than I think some of my other young colleagues did, even though we all played it and we all had fun playing, Mozart symphonies and stuff like that. And then through going to Juilliard for college and studying with Mr. Dictorow, even though, of course, lessons are always chamber music and solo repertoire, we would also work on orchestral excerpts because a lot of people in a studio of someone like him would be looking at more orchestral work. Studying with a great concertmaster, that's kind of also where your focus is going to be. So that worked really nicely for me. And it kind of like made me realize that that love of orchestra was something that could really be fascinating and fun as a career.
And how did you learn about the Savannah Philharmonic?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I had never been to Savannah, but I'd always wanted to visit. And because I've traveled a fair amount performing chamber music and all sorts of other stuff. And I'd never gotten to Savannah and always wanted to. And I'd actually heard from a colleague of mine. So I also play in the New Jersey Symphony. I'm a violinist in the New Jersey Symphony. And a colleague of ours, who is our principal French horn player, loves the city and would never stop talking backstage about what a wonderful place it was. So when I saw an advertisement come up and a friend told me that there was going to be a concertmaster audition there, I remembered my colleague's words of how wonderful the city was. And I thought, well, might as well try it. Sounds like something that would be a great opportunity. And I remember I went down for the audition and I called my husband between the rounds, because of course it's very difficult. You have multiple rounds to win an audition like that. And you never know how it's going. So between rounds, I said, I don't know how this is really going to be in the long run. Maybe I won't win. Probably just going to be flying home tomorrow. But I love the city. So I was telling my husband, we should just come down and visit. So then when I ended up winning, my husband did get to come down and visit, and he has also fallen in love with it.
And what goes into the role of the concertmaster?
You are leading and you are also not leading. I like to say that you're kind of a mind reader, and your job is to be unnoticed while also being noticed, because as the whole orchestra is obviously following the conductor, unless you're doing a work that is without conductor, but that's not really what we do here in Savannah. When you have a conductor, the role of the conductor is to be really the interpreter of the work that you're going to play. So it is, for us with Keitaro, it is Keitaro's interpretation. He is setting all of that. And then he's expressing that through his movements, but he's not making any sound most of the time, except when he's talking in rehearsal. And therefore, each of the principals, the section leaders, are in charge of interpreting what he's showing into our motions and what we are playing at the very front of each section in a way that everyone else, like a wave behind us, can follow. And primarily, even the other section leaders look to the concertmaster to sort of be the first captain, sort of like the first general underneath the person who's leading. So that's my role. And I shouldn't be too obtrusive in terms of my movements. It has to be just enough that people can follow, but not too much that it gets in the way of people expressing themselves, doing their jobs, or looking at who's most important, which is the conductor.
This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners like you and by the Savannah Jazz Festival. The Savannah Jazz Festival runs without charge from September 19th to the 21st in Forsyth Park and at District Live in the Plant Riverside District of Savannah. It features musicians such as Rodney Jordan, Spyro Gyra, and Annette Cohen. More information can be found at www.savannahjazz.org. This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Joanna Farrar, concertmaster of the Savannah Philharmonic, who will be performing the Dvorak Violin Concerto at the opening concert of the Savannah Philharmonic coming up on Saturday, September 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Lucas Theater for the Arts. And so let's talk about the Dvorak Violin Concerto. Why do the Dvorak Violin Concerto?
I've always loved Dvorak. I love his chamber music. I love his symphonies. And I've always loved his concerto. I think I first performed it with orchestra when I was either 11 or 12. And it's just a really wonderfully fun concerto. It's extremely challenging for the violinist, primarily because not only is it very technically difficult, so left hand and right hand, it's very technically challenging, but it also kind of goes without breaks. So if when you start the concerto, of course, there's small 2T sections that the orchestra is playing without the soloist, but very few. And there's no pause between the first and the second movement, very little pause even between the second and the third, but it is pretty much a continuous straight through challenge for the soloist. I like a challenge, but it also has so many gorgeous melodies because Dvorak was just the king of writing just transcendent melodies, both very, very happy things. Like the third movement is so joyous. I think it's really the third movement that I enjoy the most because you can't help but smile at this very bouncy folk melody that goes throughout all this challenging work. But before that, you have a very serious first movement, which has a lot of angst and fire in it. And then a lyrical second movement that is like a lullaby that is, I just love playing it. So melodies really is the main reason I love it.
Looking at the markings, my immediate thought was, boy, Dvorak wasn't very sure about this because it's allegro, ma non troppo, fast or lively, but not too lively.
Yeah.
Adagio, ma non troppo, slow, but not too slow. And then allegro giocoso, which is, you know, really exciting and fun, but not too fun. Don't have too much fun.
I think of it as a very wise marking because I think he's also giving a slight warning to the violinist playing it not to get too over enthusiastic, because you can with something, especially with so much joy and so much life to it, you could either want to, I mean, honestly, that allegro, you can take it too fast, especially when you are in the heat of it. And you can end up then having something a little bit too on top of the beat, shall we say, for what comes later. But you can also slow down too much because he does, in that, even in that last moment, there are moments when it does go down, but you're not supposed to let it, that energy, die too much.
Well, and the first movement, Allegro ma non troppo, it begins with a very powerful orchestral opening. And then you have a very serious legato violin. And then you repeat the serious opening with the legato violin, but this time you get to soar.
Yes, there is quite a bit of that. He takes that opening motive and repeats it a number of times through the first movement, even closing out the movement with that restatement in all different forms. Even though sometimes they are quite similar, the intensity level changes. So the first statement is intense, but a little bit less, a second more, and then it just essentially explodes into what becomes the first movement. And then you take that thematic idea and run with it for pages a lot of fast notes and a lot of chords before finally closing it out again with that statement, which is just masterfully done, obviously.
Well, as you go through the first movement, you alternate between these sort of more quiet sections, sort of legato, with these much more rhythmic sections, much more forte sections, and you sort of switch off between the orchestra and the solo violin. And when the orchestra is there with the violin, often you have woodwind writing, which is a very interesting combination of the violin with the woodwinds.
Yes, absolutely. I love that because his orchestrations are always, you know, so masterful. And you can hear that in this, of how brilliantly he pairs a lot of different sections, as you're pointing out, the woodwinds and the solo violin. There's also a couple of different points within the concerto where the French horns with the soloist have beautiful intertwinings of lines, where I will be listening very carefully to our wonderful principal. And that exchange of color allows it to not just kind of go like a freight train through the melodies, because you do get this exchange as long as we are blending well. That's where then the blend between the orchestra and the soloist has to be really clear.
And so at the very end, as you mentioned, we are attacca into the second movement. And the second movement is gorgeous. I just love his adagios.
I don't know if I can call it actually my very favorite slow movement of all violin concertos, but if it is anything, it's number two or tied for first. Because it reminds me a lot of, well, I play, obviously, the Dvorak, both the New World Symphony and then his string quartet, you know, all these kind of works that are based in America. And a lot of the melody lines and the way that he writes the melody for that slow movement reminds me a lot of how things flow in both that symphony and in the string quartet. And it's just beautiful. The end of this slow movement is by far, I think, the best ending of any violin concerto for that. Soaring up to the very heights for the violin soloist at the very end. And that's another place where it's like, you know, French horn has helped set that up. And then the soloist, we get to end the piece.
Here in the adagio, you begin with, again, the woodwinds behind the violin. And the melody that you start off with at the very beginning is sort of replaced by these short runs. And then you exchange fanfares with the brass, and you have sort of a brass choir behind you, the emotional climax of this movement. But you really get more intense before you really come to a singing end to the movement.
Yeah, it is an interesting movement because he could just sort of keep it in the very sweet lullaby-ish type of feel. But just like with the first movement, there are middle sections that are quite dark and get intense. It is not all slow sweetness in the slow movement. And I think that heightens the beauty of the spots where then he allows it to sort of come back down to that simple melodic idea, because he has put in the brass and he has put in the intensity in the middle sections, which are very fun to play. But again, he's doing all of these things with, as you mentioned, with runs, with arpeggio figures, in order to elucidate and develop the simple idea that he introduced at the beginning. He was just such a master of finding these gorgeous little melodies and then knowing how to develop them so that it feels effortless. But obviously there's incredible craft behind what he did.
Well, and as you mentioned, at the end of this movement, you get to play with the French horns.
Yes, I always love that. I'm a big brass lover, actually. My father was from England, and he was from the north of England, where brass bands are very, very prominent, and great brass playing very much part of British culture from where he was. So I always appreciate very good brass writing.
Thank you.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Joanna Farrar, concertmaster of the Savannah Philharmonic. And then the last movement is Allegro Giocoso, Manon Troppo. This opens with the orchestral strings making this sort of quiet melodic statement, and then the full orchestra enters with the theme very powerfully. And then you come on, and you alternate sort of with these powerful orchestral eruptions.
Yeah, this is the movement where you get to actually hear much more of the orchestra, because there are longer tutti sections in this last movement than there are in the other two movements. The other two movements, I mean, they have tutti's, but they're more back and forth on a quicker time scale than you have in the last movement. So that is nice because you get to hear the whole orchestra kind of rev the engine and enjoy playing the melodies and this kind of skipping motion that goes through the whole thing. And after they say their piece, then the violinist comes in and we have a lot of running 16th notes in order to sort of develop the ideas. I always think of it as you've had some very intense experiences in the first and the second movement, and this is a little bit of like the party afterwards. This is that moment of sort of rejoicing from whatever it is that has happened or you've learned in the first two movements. This is when everyone gets to get together and enjoy that experience. But I do think he's very right to make sure that we don't enjoy it too fast, as it would get too manic at that point.
Well, there's some really nice sections here too of you doing powerful double stops, interacting with the orchestra.
Yeah, that is a notorious spot. I love that page. I mean, I hate it. It's mean of him. But at the same time, I love it. And it's great. It feels like it comes out of nowhere when it happens. When you are at the concert and you are hearing it, or when you listen to a recording of the Dvorak, you will know the spot we're talking about, because you've had all this joyousness and skipping and long series of runs and things like that. And then he brings it down. And that's another one of those like, oh, and all of a sudden we are not in the skipping world. We're taking things a little bit more seriously. Something of that sort of battle that happened before, I think, like comes back into the story in that moment. And that's all those chords and all that kind of angst that the violinist goes through in order to really battle their way through that section. And then once you get through it, then now we can get back to that joyous feeling of the main portion of the movement. But you do have to grind your way through that. And again, you have to have that contrast in order for the rest of the movement to unfold and feel joyous.
Well, and after that, you fall back into the main theme of the movement, and with a powerful orchestral response of the theme. And then you sort of do the variations of the theme with the orchestra. And it then builds to a huge climax, but then it gets quiet again.
Yeah, when you think that he's aiming towards, you know, the very end, he once again brings it back down and gives the violinist more 16th notes and more of this sort of arpeggiation and this changing around of the ideas. And it builds with the help of the orchestra for an entire page, really, going through all these different stages of the same idea, this motive climbing and climbing and climbing. And it is with the orchestra. I say that because we have to match very, very carefully. That's, again, the woodwinds coming in and how the violinist and the woodwinds and then the rest of the orchestra kind of blends into that fabric. But he's doing it gradually through an entire page of music before we can get to the very final page of very, very exciting music at the very end.
Yes, because it has an emotional climax at this point. But as you said, we drop down a bit, then we return to the really powerful, again, more double stops for you, as well as strong orchestral chords to finish off the piece.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that ending. There are some violin concertos, and I'm just going to say this, some people may disagree with me, but I feel like endings are always very difficult. And there are some concertos that are just absolutely incredible all the way through, but they sometimes seem to end a little suddenly, or there's something about the climax that doesn't quite land the way that I would like it to. And I feel like this concerto, that's one of the reasons I love it so much, is I think it has a really perfect end. And that allows you as a performer, and I think, I mean, when I've heard it and when I've been in the audience for it, I think it works really well as an audience member as well, to feel like you've been on this journey, and then you get a really satisfying big ending where everyone is, well, I play separately, but then there is that whole big chords of the entire orchestra to finish that moment.
And in this concerto, which varies somewhat from his other works, the last movement is really the most development that you get and the most orchestral expression that you get compared to his other concertos, which often the first movement is the one that gets all of that great stuff and then ends very powerfully. Where this one, the first movement blends into the second movement as if it's one movement. And then we have this powerful third movement.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that the first movement, while it has a lot of drama, and it's certainly, I mean, of course, as we mentioned, there is that opening statement that he does develop through the movement, and it restates itself and gets more complex with a lot of chords, a lot of double stops. But it is on the shorter side, I think, because he's using it as that giant dramatic statement to set up the beauty of the second movement. And then he does, as you're mentioning, all that development and allowing the orchestra to bloom more in the third movement. Because it feels like the first half of the concerto, it's almost split into two in a way. Like the first half is that first and second movement where we're doing all of that storyline. And then we get to the next day, or, you know, the day after, which is that third movement.
Thank you. Thank you.
And there is a whole different world of music that is Joanna Farrar. But we're going to have to hold that for our next conversation so we can, at that point, dip into the folk side of Joanna Farrar.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. That is another whole side. So when I was mentioning that I loved Dvorak for his folk music associations, well, that is a teaser that there is something about my work that also relates to that. Yes.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I've been talking with Joanna Farrar, concertmaster of the Savannah Philharmonic, who will be performing the Dvorak Violin Concerto at the opening concert of the Savannah Philharmonic coming up on Saturday, September 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Lucas Theater for the Arts. And I want to thank you, Joanne Farrar, so much for being on the show tonight.
It is my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Link. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.